3 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be. And yes, of course, I do want to hear from you. So go ahead and give me a shout on either our phone lines or send me a text. The same number for both, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. Boy, we got a lot of ground to cover here. We got election results here, the primary election results here in Washington and several other states around the country. Not only that, we've got a couple of events going on that you need to know about that we'll be telling you more about. And, of course, we've got two contests running. We've got our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest in 2 hours' time. I'm going to give you the secret word of the morning. When I do, you'll have until 9 a.m., so almost an hour, to text that word to the number I just gave you, our text-in line. And you are automatically, when you do that, you're automatically entered for a chance to win a 4-day trip to New York City after Christmas for the New Year's Eve holiday celebrations. But get this, it's not just for you and your significant other, it's for you and 3 guests. So you're going to be there for 4 days, the 4 of you. How's that sound? Anyway.
It's great. 4 people, New York City.
Yes, yes, that's what's happening. But as you also know, while we're doing this contest all summer long, a different trip each week, thank you to our friends.
They get better and better too, John.
At Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores. Thank you again, Quinault Beach Resort. A great place, by the way. We have our internationally famous, by some accounts, legendary lyrics contest here every Wednesday. You know how it works. I give you lyrics to a classic American hit from the past. And when you hear those lyrics from that classic song going in or out of commercial break, you be the 10th caller. Tell us the name of the song, and boom, you are the winner. And you get a couple of nice little surprises to take home with you.
Yeah, and hopefully some of you winners of the Daniel's Broiler certificate there were at Daniel's Broiler at Leschi, because I had all the pilots at the Earth Show for Seafair waving down below to say, hey, where to go. $50 certificate, 4 locations, danielsbroiler.com. Take a look to reserve a table, a place, place your takeout. You can do your reservation online, John. How handy is that? And a great menu of just the seafood, the prime steak. 4 locations. Have a look at danielsbroiler.com. 2024 Bremerton Air Show, August 17th and 18th. In fact, John, I'm going over as KVI.
The summer fun continues.
Yes, and we're a part of it, apparently. So I'm going over to represent the Carlson commute and say hi at a media event here in a week or so. But this is a lot of the warbirds, perhaps, that you didn't see at Seafair. Heritage flight demonstrations of sort. P-51s, the PBY Catalina is going to be there. There's the Paracommando Skydivers, the F-4U Corsair. Cascade Warbirds are bringing all their planes. It's huge and it's convenient. You know, the airfield type air show, John, I believe, too. Just grab on the ferry boat. There's shuttles, I believe, that'll take you right down about 8 miles down Highway 3 before you get to Belfair and the Bremerton Airport right there. 300 air shows now, John, in U.S. and Canada. So these guys really had to compete to get the best, and they have the lineup for that air show. You got 2 tickets to win.
All right. So you get a pair of tickets to the air show coming up here in a couple of weeks. And you get the $50 gift card to Daniel's Broiler Restaurant, good for all 4 of their locations. It didn't take either the radio legend or Philip J. Vandervoort III very long to get our legendary lyric. Let's see if you get it as quickly as they did. I think it literally took 2 seconds before Vandervoort was
pounding on the cubicle table, yeah, desk.
Okay, so here you go. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Yeah, that is pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well, not really, but when we get to the winner, I'll explain how I know how Phil and I got it real quick. But
when you coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. All right. When you hear it, be the 10th caller, and some nice things coming your way. All right. The election yesterday, the big political news here in Washington. How did it go? Well, if you're a Democrat, it went pretty well. If you're a Republican, could have gone better. Let's preview some of the major races here in Washington State. Now, I hasten to add that about half the votes that came in have not been counted. So we are going to see some changes, I'm sure. Now, I don't know how pronounced those changes are going to be. We may have gotten a really good idea, but the votes that have been counted are what you would call early votes. And so if later votes, you know, take a, you know, tack in a different direction, that will be reflected. We don't know what direction, but here is the breakdown. Let us start with the big race. Everybody's watching the race for governor. There were, my goodness, over 25 candidates for governor. When all is said and done, Bob Ferguson is collecting 45% of the vote. Dave Reichert is collecting 28% of the vote. Semi Byrd is collecting about 9.5% of the vote. Mark Mullett, less than 6% of the vote, 5.8%. And that, of course, is the vast majority of the votes that were cast yesterday, or that have been counted as of last night, to be more accurate. What does this mean? It means a couple things. Number one, Dave Reichert has his work cut out for him. Can he win? Yes, he can win. But I will tell you something. Bob Ferguson is running the better race. Now, he's running the better race in part because he's got a lot more money to spend. But I got to tell you something. Just, you know, as someone who's observed politics for a long time here in Washington State, the Ferguson campaign was very impressive in how they set out to do their job and then how they accomplished what they were looking for. Okay, Bob Ferguson has been Attorney General for 12 years, workaholic, very strident, very partisan, Seattle liberal in terms of his politics. Not the nicest guy in the world. I'm being real kind there. But here's what he did that was very smart. Number one, he blanketed the airwaves with money. Did those soft sell biography spots that you saw, you know, with him, you know, running with his kids and watching his kids play ball and all that. And then there, of course, were the independent ads that were attacking Dave Reichert on the abortion issue, even though the abortion law in Washington State has not changed since the Dobbs decision and will not change regardless of whether Bob Ferguson or Dave Reichert is the governor of the state. OK, Okay, the issue is purely symbolic. It's not going to change, regardless of which man is the next governor. Nevertheless, by blanketing the airwaves with so many ads, and then coincidentally having these spots attacking Dave Reichert on the abortion issue, he was attempting a knockout blow. The knockout blow is that he would prevail over Reichert by so much in the primary that it would dry up Dave Reichert's fundraising ability. Did he succeed? Well, we'll find out. We will find out. I believe Reichert can win this race, but he needs to seize the messaging from Ferguson. Right now, we're hearing a lot about Donald Trump, and we're hearing a lot about abortion. We're not hearing as much about Bob Ferguson supporting an end to criminal penalties for anyone using fentanyl or anyone using heroin or meth. We don't hear about that. We don't hear about how he supports the legislation to ban natural gas in your home. We don't hear how we experienced huge increases in crime, juvenile crime, adult crime, and violent crime on his watch while he was the state's top law enforcement officer. So what should Ferguson should be on the defensive? So far, he is not. In fact, and again, this is where you have to hand it to his campaign, he's actually going out of his way to make it look like he's the tough on crime candidate. He wants to hire more cops. And so by doing that, what he was trying to do was inoculate himself against accusations, accurate ones, by the way, accurate accusations, that he's weak on crime. So that is where we find ourselves. As for Semi Byrd, every poll that has come out since Dave Reichert and Semi Byrd have been in this race have shown that Semi Byrd was between 3-1 and 4-1 behind Dave Reichert. In other words, for every vote that Semi had in the polls, Reichert had 3 votes or 4 votes. And so what did we see last night in the primary? We saw Semi Byrd with about a 3-1 ratio. He's got 9.5% of the vote. Reichert's got 28%. So that basically that ratio has held. Reichert far ahead. Semi Byrd had much more visibility on the ground in terms of yard signs and 4x4s. Dave Reichert had more visibility on the airwaves. The real disappointment for a lot of folks was Mark Mullett. The business community, a lot of people in the business community said, let's put our money behind Mark Mullett because a Republican can't win. Well, Dave Reichert's getting about 5 votes for every vote that Mark Mullett got. He got under 6%. Great guy. He would make a much better governor than Bob Ferguson. Not as good a governor as Dave Reichert. But anyway, he's probably spent more money per vote than any of the other candidates. And again, finishes with little under 6%. So we'll see what happens. Mark Mullett gave up his state Senate race to run for governor. We'll see what his next move is. All right. There are a lot of other races going on here in Washington. Congressional races being watched around the country. Eight other statewide elective offices. A Supreme Court contest. We'll get into all that as well as what was happening around the country. And again, day two of Kamala Harris's new Kamala Harris's choice as running mate, Tim Walz, the ardently liberal and occasionally obnoxious and incompetent, largely incompetent governor of Minnesota. Waited too long to call out the National Guard while Minneapolis was on fire during the George Floyd Black Lives Matter riots. His state was taken for $250 million, not $250 million, $250 million in COVID fraud, kept his state schools locked down longer than almost any other governor, and then lied about it. What it means that Kamala Harris picked him, and how is the media trying to help the Kamala Harris campaign and her choice of Tim Walz? Well, we will play you examples of exactly how they're trying to help out the ticket. They're trying to mischaracterize Tim Walz. They'll probably get away with it in the short run, but you can't keep up this kind of PR facade for the next 10 weeks. All right, Philip G. Vandervoort III is 25 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, and what's going to be relatively cool, but otherwise warm.
I'm trying to warm it up with the fire song. It's 55 degrees right now in fog. And this is August.
I don't want to hear people complain about, oh, the weather's too hot. Plenty cool off and on at different points in the last week or two.
Think what other people are going through right now. All right. It's a pleasant and balmy 147 degrees in Arizona right now. All right. What do we got going in the social media world?
We got to talk election stuff and election results. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. KVI's afternoon host, Ari Hoffman, he was pretty candid last night after the first round of statewide and, I guess, to some extent, local election results came out. Ari posted last night, I'm not seeing a lot of surprises in Washington races, but many Republicans have an uphill climb. Mm-hmm. We'll see what tomorrow's ballot drop brings, and now that tomorrow is this afternoon's. So what, around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock is when elections usually kick out another batch of results from whatever was turned in yesterday, probably?
Yeah. That's the timeline we're talking about.
We're
about halfway through. Half the votes remain to be counted, and sometimes the late arriving votes go in a different direction.
Yeah, I wondered about that because that would potentially point to some more trouble for Republican type candidates if the late returning ballots tend to skew, say, Democrat or liberal or left leaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's an instructive reminder for everybody. Be listening to Ari this afternoon, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. That's when that next batch of election results is going to come out. Ari will be talking about it as it happens on his show here this afternoon on KVI.
That's when the votes will drop. There will be another drop this afternoon.
Ferguson, all eyes on Ferguson as the candidate for governor. He had some, what I would have to say, are pretty promising results given the circumstances. He posted last night, the message tonight is clear. Washingtonians are ready to work together to take on our toughest challenges, improving public safety, lowering costs of housing, groceries, and childcare, and protecting our essential freedoms like the right to choose. Well, you know, Bob caused 3 out of 4 of those problems that he just cited.
Yes.
And now we're supposed to trust him to fix the problems that he more or less ushered in or ignored or helped cause. And somebody pointed out, Somebody pointed out in the comments thread for Ferguson, Washingtonians would have wouldn't have so many tough challenges, Bob, right now if it weren't for you and Inslee.
Yeah, it was. His slogan could be "Working together to solve the problems I help create."
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's one maybe silver lining or one bright spot amongst some of the results in the statewide election last night. Lands commissioner.
You'll be all right.
Oh my God!
Did you get into lands commissioner?
Oh, the lands commissioner race is incredibly bizarre because you might actually, in a night that Democrats did very well, you might end up with a statewide race where two Republicans face off for the lands commissioner, yeah. Meaning you would be in charge of the state forest lands.
Yeah, and Jamie Herrera Butler is a former U.S. Congresswoman, former state legislature down in Southwest Washington. She's kind of got a slim lead over, what is it, seven candidates, I think?
Yeah, Jamie Herrera Butler, and then Sue Kuehl Peterson is in second, just barely ahead of Dave Upthegrove, who had this massive advertising blitz. The problem with the Democrats here, and this is what can happen in what are called jungle primaries, mm-hmm. is that there were three or four viable, credible Democrats who wanted the job, and instead of working things out beforehand, they just all decided to run.
Yeah, canceled
each other out.
If I say I'm deeply worried about Dave Upthegrove making it to the final ballot in November, is that reasonable? Because he is just radically King County Council.
You don't want a Seattle-centric
urbanist, liberal, right?
You don't want a Seattle urbanist liberal beholden to liberal urban interest groups running the state forest lands, managing the state forest lands.
Yeah, that would be like worse than Inslee taking over as the lands commissioner.
Yeah, or having Bob Ferguson in charge of law and order. Oops. We saw what happened when he was. Our legendary lyric contest continues. When you hear this lyric going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10. Identify the song and some nice prizes for you. Pair of tickets to the upcoming Bremerton Air Show. Yes, summer fun in the sky continues this month. Again, this show over on the peninsula, it is incredibly popular. And you also win a $50 gift card to Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse, all four of their locations welcoming their gift card. The lyric for this hit from the 1970s is, "When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then." That's pretty easy. I think you probably know it, but wait until you hear it before you call. 206-421-5757. Okay, it wasn't just an election here in Washington. Across the country, there were some other states, namely Missouri and Michigan, having primaries. The race that was being watched more than any other was the race for Congress in St. Louis, Missouri, maybe one of the least pleasant, most radical, and obnoxious members of the House of Representatives. Her name is Cori Bush. The subject of a federal criminal investigation earlier this year, was trying to win a fourth term in office. She is stridently anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, and that brought the ire of the Jewish community, the Jewish lobby, American Israeli Public Affairs Committee against her. They spent, are you ready for this, $8 million to support her Democratic primary challenger. His name is Wesley Bell, former prosecutor. So You will recall that one of the other most annoying people in the House of Representatives, Jamal Bowman, lost his reelection bid to a more moderate Democrat. That's in Long Island. And the American-Israeli PAC spent over $14 million in that race to help the opponent of, again, someone who's not only not supportive, but someone who's usually just almost antagonistically strident. So anyway, Cori Bush lost her race last night. She lost it by 6 percentage points. Here's Cori Bush last night.
Whether I'm Congresswoman or not, I'm still taking care of my people. And let me say this. Because your side was so weak, you had to spend $19 million.
Well, it got the job done. Doesn't sound like a classy, contrite concession. No well wishes to her opponent. Anyway, here's some helpful context to this race.
Now, Bush's loss and Bell's win marks the second time in three cycles that a challenger has unseated the incumbent in the first district here. The hope from both politicians is that whomever takes the seat in November can really unite the region. Here's Bell with more on that.
In a county of 88 municipalities and 55 police departments, you can't get anything done without working together. So the day after I was elected as county prosecutor, we started working and meeting with every single one of our chiefs. There's no workaround, there's no shortcut to building relationships, and that's the same approach that I'm going to take to D.C.
Again, that's Wesley Bell, who defeated Cori Bush, who, as you can see, goes down angry and bitter.
Whether I'm Congresswoman or not, I'm still taking care of my people. And let me say this. Because your side was so weak, you had to spend $19 million.
Okay, they undoubtedly think that was money well spent. That's how she sounds in defeat. Can you imagine how she would sound if she had won that race? All right. By the way, announcement, bringing it home local here for a moment on the John Carlson Show. On Friday, day after tomorrow, you will be able to buy gasoline for $3.47 a gallon at one place that I know of, okay? It's going to be in Burien on the at the Shell station on 1st Avenue South and 146th. So again, Burien, the Shell station, 146th and 1st Avenue South, selling gas for $3.47 a gallon for 2 hours from 8 till 10. It is to advertise how much gasoline would likely cost if we didn't artificially spike the price of gas. One of those spikes is Jay Inslee's carbon gas tax. We call it the hidden gas tax. Inslee calls it the Climate Commitment Act, or the cap and trade, or cap and invest scheme. What it all gets down to is raising the price of gasoline about 43 cents a gallon on working class people, and then using that money not for roads, but for government programs that do other things. In fact, the law that authorizes the Climate Commitment Act specifically says that not a penny of the increase in gasoline can go toward roads, bridges, maintenance, or repair. It can't go, in other words, they're artificially raising the price of gasoline, but not to make your drive less congested or safer. No, it will be spent on green programs. So they're redistributing wealth from working class people and privately crowing about how they're making it more inconvenient for people to be in their cars. And using the money to grow the government. That's not only wealth redistribution, that is wealth redistribution going in the wrong direction. All right. We have still in front of us, Donald Trump's campaign has released an ad. It might be the best ad he has ever run. It might be one of the best political ads you're going to hear this year for any candidate running for any office. We'll be playing that for you next hour. We'll also be highlighting the media strategy to portray the governor of Minnesota, now running mate of to Kamala Harris, as something he demonstrably is not. He's being portrayed as a folksy, moderate, down-the-middle kind of guy. No, he's not. And wait until you hear how the media are almost out-competing each other to try and plant that label on him. Maybe they'll get away with it for a few more days, but it ain't going to stick because it just is so obviously not true. Examples of that coming your way. It is 46 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Our friend Lars Larson is right around the corner, the John Carlson Show. Check in with Lars as well as the day after the Washington primary. We're still going over the results and what they mean for November as the commute continues. Good morning. 8 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI this morning. Great hearing you. By the way, in about an hour and 15 minutes, we will have our secret word of the day for our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. All right. Let's check in with our good buddy from Southwest Washington, Lars Larson. Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, John, and there was nothing I thought that could ever be done that would make Kamala Harris look moderate. But bringing on Tim Walz makes her look moderate by comparison, only in relative terms. But this is a crazy choice. This guy's nuts.
So tell me, if you're Donald Trump,
yeah,
how do you feel about the Harris-Walz ticket?
I think I feel good about it because if there was ever a question that you knew that Harris is going to try to tack to the middle, you know, to some extent, because she say, "Oh no, I'm Kamala the cop, not Kamala the bail raiser for rioters."
Kamala the
but,
cop.
Well, no, she's been trying to portray herself as, and she's done this before because she said, "Look, I was a DA, I was the Attorney General, I put people in jail for marijuana." Oh, forget I said that. I put people in jail for marijuana and then admitted I smoked it myself. She has lots of contradictions, but she's going to try to portray herself as a middle-of-the-road candidate. And now she's brought in a guy from the extreme left. And let me tell you how extreme. He not only believes, as Kamala believes and the Democrat Party believes, in abortion on demand for any reason, any time, up to the moment of birth, but Tim Walz goes beyond birth because his own state agencies say that during his tenure as governor, there were babies who were born alive after botched abortions. Now, do you try to give medical assistance to that child, or do you just set him aside in a bassinet in a room and walk away until you can come back in a few hours and they'll be dead? Which option do you think Tim Walz and the state of Minnesota exercise?
Well, the latter that you just described is meets the definition of homicide.
Now, does that meet the definition of extreme on
homicide is extremism.
Yes. and apparently, legally, they can do it. And I'll remind you that the great Barack Hussein Obama was one of the only people as a state senator in Illinois to stand up on the floor and vocally support the idea of opposing any limitation on what's called born alive, meaning you have an abortion. It intended to kill the baby while it was inside of mom. Baby is now outside of mom and alive. You do everything you can to save it. There was legislation in Illinois, a state like Illinois, to say you must, if the baby is born alive, give it every ounce of medical
care you can
deliver.
Well, of course you must. It's a human being.
And Barack Hussein Obama, the great constitutional scholar, opposed that bill openly and loudly.
You know, I once heard a speech by a young woman who was supposed to have been aborted and accidentally was born alive.
Yep.
And her life was saved because when you have a live human being on the scene, you are duty bound as ethically and legally to save the life of the baby. It's now a baby. It's alive.
You couldn't do otherwise.
And it was one of the most touching speeches I've ever heard from someone, and to think that in some states it's legal to let them die by neglect strikes me as just more than macabre. It's just depraved.
Kamala's running mate believes in abortion beyond the moment of birth.
Lars Larson, our Noon to Three host, Talk Radio 570 KVI, hour number two right around the corner.
The good news is that the people of this great state will have a very, very clear choice for their next governor. A choice between our vision to move Washington State forward and his vision to take us backwards.
That is Bob Ferguson. Had a good night last night. Primary races for all statewide offices, including governor. Bob Ferguson finishing the first round of primary voting. Remember, there's about half of the vote left to count. There shouldn't be. We should know by now who the winner is. But because of our all-mail-in voting system and the fact that you can mail your ballot as late as, well, you can have it postmarked as late as yesterday, means that many, many ballots have yet to be opened and counted. Ferguson finished ahead of expectations, but again, his campaign was designed to flood the airwaves with soft sell biographical spots, while there were ads by single issue groups, independent expenditure groups, that were aimed at Dave Reichert, claiming that he would try and change Washington's abortion laws. That is not true, of course, but the strategy worked. And now Reichert finishes with 28% of the vote. Can he win? Yeah, he's going to have to make some changes, clearly. And Sammy Byrd finished well back in the pack. He's still in single figures with 9.5% of the vote. Mark Mullett, less than 6% of the vote. There were a number of other races. You had Denny Heck finishing with about 49% of the vote, the total vote, in a crowded field for lieutenant governor. He's the incumbent. Dan Matthews is probably going to be facing off against him. He finished back with 22%. The combined Democrat vote was about 57% in that race. The Attorney General contest, Pete Serrano finished with 42% of the vote, again, so far. Nick Brown with 36%. Manka Dhingra, the radical state senator from Redmond, largely responsible for soft-on-crime measures, one of the champions of the anti-police chase law, which has now been repealed by her own legislature after an initiative to repeal it qualified for the ballot, and the Democrats basically agreed to take the hit and repeal it themselves because it would have passed with 70% of the vote in November. Manka Dingra finishes with 22%, way back in the pack. So Pete Serrano gets almost twice the vote of Manka Dingra. Nick Brown finishes with a respectable 36%. The combined Democrat vote there is 58%. Pete Serrano at about 42%. So he had a good night last night, but he's got some work to do to solidify his position. That is, again, one possibility.
Is that 8%, 16% differentiation between the vote outcomes between Democratic voters, Republican voters in that attorney general race? Is that something that Pete Serrano can narrow down and maybe even overcome in debates?
Yeah, he can. Keep in mind, when you have a choice in one contest, or for one party's contest and not in the other, some people will vote just so they can make a choice.
Yeah.
So they can, you know, have some say in who the other party runs.
Yeah, hopefully Serrano can make a real impact in that.
So Serrano,
the general election.
Yeah, Serrano did okay. Over in the race for Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs comfortably ahead, 49%. Dale Whitaker, 37%. He was the lone Republican in the race. The big surprise for Republicans, and I don't know if this will hold with another round of ballots that are going to be dropped this afternoon and then another round on Thursday and Friday, is currently two Republicans are winning the nomination for the top two. Jamie Herrera Butler got 22.5% of the vote. Sue Kuehl Peterson, who ran for this position last time as a Republican, has a science background. She would be a wonderful lands commissioner. She got 20% of the vote, a little about 20.3% of the vote. Dave Up the Grove, liberal urbanist, councilman, finishes with about 20% of the vote. So he's about 4,000 votes behind Sue Peterson right now.
If I were to call Dave Up the Groove a Dow Constantine wannabe, would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's why we cannot let that guy get elected to lands commissioner.
So here's what happened. There were several qualified and credible Democrats who had the ability to raise money, and they canceled each other out. And so that is why Sue Peterson and Jamie Butler, you know, they combined for about 43% of the vote. But the Democrats split up the other 57% between them and took themselves out. The race for insurance commissioner is going to be Patty Kutterher and Phil Fortunato. Again, this is a lot at stake in this race. This race, insurance commissioner, may actually impact your wallet as much as any race on the ballot, except for governor. Patty Kutterher has made it clear she is a stridently liberal state senator from Bellevue. Again, the state senators from Bellevue and Redmond, Patty Kutterher and Manka Dingra, would easily fit in on the Seattle City Council 4 years ago. I mean, they are that progressive in their mindset. And Patty has said that she wants to crusade, use the position of insurance commissioner to crusade for an end of medical insurance and have Washington State be a single-payer healthcare, socialized medicine state.
So an end to your employer-provided insurance, right?
Yeah, the state would be your new
substitute all that
insurance provider. Three other states have tried this. It crashed and burned in all three states. Okay? It did not work in, I think it was Maine. It didn't work in Colorado. It didn't work in, was it Massachusetts? Bottom line is, it's been tried. We've had a chance to see whether you can have socialized medicine at the state level. And what happened is it exponentially increased people's taxes, and it wasn't enough to cover the bills anyway. So Phil Fortunato should make this race a mandate on Patty Kutcher and how much she wants to increase your payroll tax, because that's the only way you can make this pay.
You know, John, a lot of us, too, in the smaller town communities, were finding out, you know, because the expenses of medical coverage or whatever, it's better. They're finding out, go for a catastrophic-type insurance policy, because there's a lot of doctors that agree with consumers and are like, hey, I've got my office here. Just come on in. $50 will take care of the simple stuff. Mm-hmm. But then the catastrophic will take care of the big, serious stuff, if that's a matter. And, you know, it comes in handy. Karen and I, actually, we're doing that for a year just to try it out, and so far, so great. We don't have that big premium every month, i.e., we're staying healthy.
Yeah.
But again, you want to be prepared for so-called nightmare-type situations, but the catastrophic will kick in when that happens. So
yeah, the kind of health insurance that would work best would be that you pay a monthly fee to a local health office, a local doctor's office, and or your employer. This would be part of your health coverage from your employer. Instead of health insurance to cover everything, they would cover your direct primary health care at your doctor's office. It's saved for a $100 fee that covers your family per month. And if you need a physical, or if you fell and you need stitches, or whatever, that's taken care of, and it's covered by the fee. If you get seriously ill, then that is when a high deductible insurance policy kicks in and covers the necessary expenses. To use an analogy, your car insurance does not cover oil changes, your 50,000-mile service, et cetera, et cetera. It covers automobile crashes that do substantial damage. That's what insurance is supposed to do. So if your employer as a benefit wants to cover the low-level health expenses you have, like you just mentioned, Earmark, then they should be doing that by covering your fees at your local doctor's office and then saving money for the company by buying a high-deductible health insurance policy to cover everything else. In other words, we would have less government and less of a role for government and insurance companies in healthcare if we did it that way. And instead, you've got people with an unerring instinct for making problems worse, like Patty Kutcher, who was on the wrong side of all the crime issues, now say, well, if we want healthcare to be better, we need to socialize it. We need to have the government take it over completely. All right. another statewide race where the Democrat in the race, the identifiable Democrat in the race, even though it's officially a nonpartisan, Chris Reichdahl, incumbent Democrat, under 40%, 39.7%, by far underperforming any other incumbent for reelection. David Olson, who you've heard on this show several times, I've endorsed David for the superintendent of public instruction or state school superintendent. He comes in with 31%. Reed Saris, who you heard on this show, who was doing quite well in his interview until he, in my opinion, he was doing quite well until he came out in favor of boys participating in girls' sports if they identify as a girl. He's getting 24% of the vote. So it looks like it's going to be Chris Reichdahl versus Dave Olson. I hope Reed Saris will endorse Dave Olson, because that's the only way we're going to get change. And then finally, statewide, sad news, Raul Garcia, great guy, great candidate, has worked so hard. But Maria Cantwell just has the wind at her back and many, many millions of dollars. She got 58% of the vote last night. Raul came in with 21% of the vote. Other Republicans combined another 15%. That's still well below the Republican combined vote, still well below where you see the incumbent senator.
How long is Cantwell?
She's been there 24 years.
Wow.
She's been there 24 years.
Wow.
And
that's all right. She's going to make sure that all those price gouging big companies pay for their price gouging. That's her big ticket item, isn't it?
That's what she says. Okay. It's what she says. And finally, we had one statewide judicial race, and that is the race for Supreme Court. You have Sal Mungia, would be yet another liberal member on a state Supreme Court where there are no conservatives or no moderates. So he would be another voice. He got 42% of the vote. Dave Larson, not far behind at all, with 37% of the vote. So that's a competitive race for the Washington State Supreme Court. So that pretty much reflects the election. A good night for Democrats in most of these contests, and some uphill races for Republicans that can still be won. All I can say is thank God we've got those initiatives on the ballot.
Any percentages yet we've seen of how many actually returned their ballot in time in this primary?
Voter turnout, I think they've got about 20, we're looking at about 20% of the registered voters have had their ballots counted already. There's another 400,000 that need to be. We are the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Our legendary lyric contest underway right now. Couple of great prizes, including a pair of tickets to the Bremerton Air Show later this month. Your lyric, and I bet you'll know it quickly. It's from a huge hit of the 1970s. When you coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. When you hear it, be the 10th caller, identify the song, and those prizes are going to be yours. Again, we'll be playing it sometime within the next hour on the John Carlson Show. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what's going on in the social media world?
Let's talk about the economic climate here in the state of Washington, since we're kind of applying that to what we know about the election returns from yesterday. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. John, I got to ask you where you think the state of Washington falls in rankings with other states for unemployment rates. We're always kind of hearing nationally unemployment is very low, and it's always gets portrayed as an economic benefit. Wow, right now unemployment across the nation is pretty low, 3.5-ish, something like that.
And you would think
you know
that
where Washington ranks out of 51 states in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, you would think that it would rank really low here in Washington because of our emphasis on tech.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I think we rank like 21st, 22nd.
Going to have to check your math. Todd Myers posted a list.
Yes.
Todd Myers from the Washington Policy Center. Washington State has the fourth worst unemployment rate in the nation. We rank 47
what?
Out of 51.
I and was the, being nice.
The unemployment
Inslee?
Rate.
And I'm made to look foolish because I was
rate.
Being nice to Inslee?
Yeah.
Wow. I underestimated just how many jobless we have here in Washington.
4.9% unemployment in the state as of June 2024.
Jeez.
Ranking 47th overall. So
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be nice to Inslee.
Is that something that Republican candidates for office could potentially be pointing out here as we go into the general election campaign run?
Hmm. Maybe. The question we should be asking, Philip J., why haven't we been hearing this from Republican candidates running for statewide office?
Yeah.
Why have I haven't heard a single Republican mention
what
just shocked me, and I'm not that shockable. I mean, most news does not come as a surprise to me when it comes to statistics. This one really did surprise me.
And
we are 47th in the 46th right. in the nation.
And you know that the minimum wage, artificially high minimum wage law is a big pet peeve of mine, a big issue for me.
Yeah.
California's unemployment rate is worse at 5.2, ranking 49th. District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., is the worst in the nation with a 5.4 rate. I don't know what the minimum wage is in District Columbia, but I do know about what's been going on in California. And I think that that's something that you've got to recognize, that if you want to jack up the minimum wage rate, you're also going to end up reducing the incentives to hire more labor, and you're going to end up with a higher unemployment rate.
There you go.
Now we're still on that list, you guys. Seattle recovering from the pandemic. We seem to be one of the slow U.S. cities. And drive downtown. Look at all the shops that are still not there, and a lot of people lost those jobs, and what do we do now?
Wow. Again, Washington State ranks 47th among the 50 states in for having the worst, the highest unemployment rate.
Let's try and zip through a couple more here. Yesterday in Philadelphia, Tim Walz, the new vice presidential selection for Kamala Harris, said, in Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make, even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves. There's a golden rule, mind your own damn business. That's what Walz said on stage with Kamala Harris by his side. And Reason Magazine is pointing out Tim Walz was a COVID-19 tyrant with shutdowns and things like that.
Just as bad as Inslee.
Yeah, saying that he had set up a COVID hotline so people could
report snitch on
neighbors for being outside at the park, threaten violators with $1,000 fines and jail times.
I thought, mind your own damn business.
Yeah, how does that make
Wasn't
sense?
Wasn't he just saying that? Mind your own damn business?
Well, you know, you
and
gotta,
he set up a snitch line?
You got to cover your tracks when you go into a big election. And then the Babylon Bee, you know, it's supposed to be satire comedy and parody, but it's a little too close to reality here. They write, Democrats worried choosing Jewish vice president may cost them the all-important death to America vote. So kudos to the Babylon Bee on that one.
Well, you see, the Republican convention, they were chatting USA, USA. Now, I hope we don't hear death to America from too many of their delegates at the Democratic convention. All right, it is 7:30 on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, a little more about what the media are telling you about Tim Walz versus the reality. It's all coming your way. The news media are insisting that the new choice to run as vice presidential running mate for Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, is really a down-home moderate kind of guy. Listen to this montage. It starts with former U.S. Democratic U.S. Senator from Missouri, the defeated Claire McCaskill, who is now an MSNBC commentator. Then you'll hear CNN's Brianna Kyler.
The idea that Tim Walz is some lefty is just not true in reality. He got elected in a district that was very moderate.
Walz, of course, was very moderate in Congress.
Establishing himself as a moderate Democrat.
He had a pretty moderate record, rather moderate Democrat, viewed as a moderate Democrat.
He is a centrist. To say that he's more liberal than Vice President Harris or the most liberal congressman, which I'm sure we're going to hear, just not true.
In Congress, he was certainly a centrist, but a more centrist deal-making candidate.
Kind of a centrist Midwesterner in persona.
A more centrist type who can appeal to suburban voters.
We have heard from Democrats who know him, who describe him as folksy, as somebody who can reach out to independents.
He will be able to pull over some of those more moderate voters.
He has a history of appealing to the more rural, moderate voter out there.
Moderates, even moderate Republicans.
Absolutely more moderate than people are giving him credit for right now. I would like someone to point out a place that he is different on an issue than Josh Shapiro.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard right away. Minnesota not only has a pro-abortion rights law like Josh Shapiro's Pennsylvania, it allows abortion up to the moment of birth. Not only that, but the law in Minnesota also does not permit a baby that is born during an abortion. In other words, a botched abortion where the baby lives. It does not allow the doctor to save the baby's life, which to me sounds like homicide. It certainly is extreme. And you have to ask yourself, who is the ghoulish person who would write such a bill, who would say, we need to put this in writing, that life-saving care must be given to infants. We need to remove the requirement that life-saving care must be given to infants born alive after surviving an abortion. Again, just to clarify, if an infant is born alive during an abortion, the law, of course, would stipulate it's a human being, it's got a heartbeat, it's living, and you're duty-bound to try and save its life. That requirement has been stripped. So a doctor has the option, but is not required. And by the way, they also removed the ban on non-physicians performing abortion. So they have the most radical abortion statute in the state of Minnesota. Not only that, they are arguably the most radical state in the country when it comes to the trans issue. They actually call themselves a sanctuary state for youth, meaning children, seeking gender-affirming care. So while other states are passing legislation to protect children, in Minnesota, they're allowing courts to take custody of children whose parents will not subject them to gender-affirming treatments. Keep in mind, puberty blockers, which used to be encouraged in Great Britain for young people who questioned their gender identity, and then was tolerated legally as research began raising doubts about whether this is good for the child's mental health. And now they banned puberty blockers. In fact, their Supreme Court in Great Britain, when the trans lobby sued to try and reverse the ban on puberty blockers, the Supreme Court, the equivalent of the Supreme Court in Great Britain, came down in favor of the law that says no more puberty blockers for minors. So this is, if you will, if you look at the trans law, the abortion law, if you look at the fact that he increased the state budget 38% in one budget cycle. 38% in one budget cycle. Even Jay Inslee hadn't done that. And you're calling this guy a moderate? Yeah, doesn't quite work. He dithered and delayed in calling out the National Guard when Minneapolis was on fire. Remember, Minneapolis, the center of the rioting after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. So, and when those riots were going on, Tim Walz's wife, her name is Gwen, the First Lady of Minnesota, told a reporter that during the riots, she would leave the windows open in their residence so she could smell the burning tires of the arsons and looting and vandalism. I know it sounds weird, but have a listen. This is her talking to a reporter. This is Tim Walz's wife, the First Lady of Minnesota, Gwen Walz.
I would say those first days, you know, when there were riots, I could smell the burning tires. And that was a very real thing. And I kept the windows open for as long as I could because I felt like that was such a touchstone of what was happening.
The First Lady of Minnesota left the windows open so she could smell the smell and breathe in the fumes of rioting. She is married to the guy who says that J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are weird. I'm sorry. They're not weird. You may not agree with them. But opening your window so you can smell burning tires during a riot? That's weird.
Which cars were most likely to be set on fire back in that summer of 2020? Do you remember offhand? I'm going to submit that it was probably police car tires. I know that that's what happened in Seattle.
A number of police cars and
vehicles that burned in Seattle right after the George Floyd
yeah.
killing and protests. It was police vehicles that were set on fire.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Good observation. I was wondering, I said, you know, how do you know a Chevy from a Ford, you know, et cetera?
I mean, I'm just going off of the video that I remember seeing.
There may have been other
civilian vehicles.
Many police cars were set on fire and a police precinct was burned down. On purpose, by the way, they let the protesters burn down a police precinct, just like in Seattle, the mayor, Jenny Durkin, allowed a police precinct to be closed. Shuttered. The East precinct, which was disgraceful. And the beginning of the end of Jenny Durkin's political career. Back we are, The Commute with Carlson. We got ourselves a winner, Ernie in Spanaway. He heard the legendary lyrics of Harry Chapin there. The song Cats in the Cradle. Ernie will be going to the Bremerton Air Show. Also wins the $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card.
Air selection for today. Quick story. Do you got one?
Yeah, the song began as a poem written by Harry Chapin's wife. And she had been previously married, and her husband had a very awkward relationship with his father. And so she wrote a poem. Harry Chapin developed a song from that poem and said the song was about his own relationship with his young son. And again, I think it's one of those songs that can't help but make every dad out there say, am I spending enough time with my boy? Am I spending enough time with my family? It's a wonderful song. Harry Chapin tragically died before he was 40 in a car crash in New York.
I think you were amazed, too, when you brought the lyric to us and threw it at us as an audition, and both Phil and I. Phil slammed the table. I had a big smile and finished the lyric. And I think it's because we're both dads.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you hear about it, you know, as growing up, you heard that song and you're the child in that equation. Then a couple years later, you're the father in that equation. And it rings so true, eternally true.
And you hope that when you call your kid later on in life, you don't get the, I'd love to see you, Dad. Kind of busy right now.
Yeah. Can I borrow the car keys? Dad, I have a date.
But it's just a wonderful song. You know, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time.
Yeah.
Boy.
You're going to grow up be just like you, Dad.
Okay. So when we come back, thank you very much, Harry Chapin, for leaving us with that song. And Taxi.
And his wife for helping leave us with that song.
Wow, very cool.
It is coming up here on 5 minutes to 8 o'clock, which means in less than 10 minutes, I'll be giving you our word of the morning to enter our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. Man, it's a great, great trip. It's a trip to New York City for you and three guests. So the four of you are going to spend four nights in the Big Apple over the latter part of the holiday. So you can be there for New Year's Eve. How does that sound? Anyway. Hour number three of the John Carlson Show, right around the corner. Oh, who's ready for the third hour of the John Carlson Show? Talk Radio 570 KVI Radio. Program of record for you here, ladies and gentlemen, the 7th day of August. All right. As you know, at this time, every day, of the summer. I have every day of the work week this summer. I give you a secret word that automatically, all you have to do is text the word I give you to our regular text in line number, 206-421-5757. All you do is text the word and you are automatically entered into the contest for our Take the Trip at a drawing at the end of the week. If you don't want the trip and you win, you can take the money, keep the cash, $3,000 worth. But you might want to take the trip on this one because it's a trip to New York City. Four nights for you and three friends. So this is a trip for four. Okay. It's a trip for you and three friends. Over the latter part of the holidays, you'll be celebrating New Year's Eve in New York. So they still have all the gorgeous Christmas decorations. They do Christmas right in New York City. Maybe you want to go to Times Square. Maybe you say, no, too crowded. I think I'll just, go to a Broadway play or something else. But again, four nights over the latter part of the holidays with you and three friends. So the word of the morning is fairy. Not as in Peter Pan fairy or tooth fairy, but in ferry boat. Mark Christopher patiently waits day after day for the ferry. F-E-R-R-Y.
I had to look at that word a few times. Thinking, how would they come up? Oh, yeah, that's right.
F-E-R-R-Y.
Another ferry sailing was canceled.
Yes.
Due to staffing shortages.
Yes. We hear that all the time.
Staten Island Ferry, that's a free one over there. You got to take that. It's a good ride.
There you go.
So, again, that is your word. You have until, 55 minutes. 55 minutes to text the word ferry to 206-421-5757. Now, as your reward for listening to KVI throughout the day, there's going to be another secret word, a separate, new and distinct separate word during the 11 o'clock hour. That's during the Marklene Van Camp Robin show. And then there's going to be another one during Lars Larson's show, 1 o'clock hour. And finally, there will be another word, again, a separate word, during the Ari Hoffman show at 4. Now, you're probably thinking, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to call every single minute from now until 9 o'clock and text the word fairy. I'm going to text the word fairy, 50 times. Don't do that, because once you enter, once your number is locked in, then it's locked in for the contest.
For that one word.
So you're just being redundant. You're not entering 50 times. Once you're in, you're in. Okay?
La Nina year, I'll make a prediction. You're going to have snow in New York. You win this trip. Watch. Snowball fight in Central Park. Sleigh ride. I see it already.
Okay. They'll have the Central Park Rangers from the movie Elf after you if you do that. But anyway, good luck. Again, the word is fairy, F-E-R-R-Y. Text it to 206-421-5757. All right. A lot is happening. A lot going on in the news. Let us start. Chuck Todd, formerly the moderator of Meet the Press until he just got so annoying they replaced him. And he's still there with NBC, and he's often a guest on the show he used to moderate. That's got to be uncomfortable. But he was talking about the choice of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who is not a moderate, who is actually one of America's most liberal governors, which you would think would kind of stand out in the Midwest, but apparently not to the National Press Corps. They say, "Oh, it doesn't seem that liberal to me."
His list of achievements in Minnesota looks an awful lot like Jay Inslee's.
Jay Inslee and Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
Plus, he's every bit as incompetent at governing as Jay Inslee is. They got taken for $250 million in COVID fraud. Anyway, here's what Chuck Todd had to say about the choice of Tim Walz as Kamala Harris's running mate.
I'm wondering, I have a yellow flag in my head going, huh, if you squeal loud enough, she hears in response. You know, there is going to be people that will come away from this experience thinking, huh, the progressive backlash is what got her off of Shapiro or what got her off of Kelly. In fairness, maybe they didn't vet either, okay? That's also a possibility when all said and done. But on substance, that I can't help but have that takeaway.
Yeah, he's saying the quiet part out loud like Van Jones did. We ran that yesterday late in the show where he says we may have seen the dark influence of the radical left in the selection of Tim Walz. Here's what it gets down to. The left did not want Josh Shapiro. They did not want Phil, real quickly, why am I blanking on the astronaut?
Mark Kelly.
Senator Kelly in Arizona. They said, we don't want Senator Kelly, and we don't want, definitely don't want Josh Shapiro. They're both liberal, but they are not left wing. They are not progressive. They wanted a left winger, and they especially didn't want Shapiro because he's not only pro-Israel, but he's Jewish. And anti-Semitism is becoming more and more observable on the left wing of the Democrat Party. Okay? It's there. And we saw it during the so-called Palestinian protests. They're not pro-Palestinian. They're pro-Hamas. They were anti-Israel, and they're anti-Jewish. When you hear from the river to the sea, that means Jews, leave. Leave the Holy Land. Leave Jerusalem. You don't belong to the land that you have called home for 3,000 years. So, basically, this was Kamala Harris's first test. Would she select someone who was to her right, but still left of center, like Mark Kelly, like Josh Shapiro? Or was she going to pick someone who is every bit as liberal, maybe even more so? And she went with the lefty. Now, he comes packaged in, you know, kind of like John Tester in Montana. He almost, you know, looks like a Republican, you know, crew cut, you know, talks about farming.
I see the connections you're drawing there.
But he's one of the most liberal members of the Senate. He's probably going to lose his job this year. He's running for a fourth term. You've got this guy who was in the National Guard and was a school teacher and a coach. And you say, yeah, you know, kind of a Midwestern guy. But again, if you look at what he did as governor, the most pro-transgender state in the country, a sanctuary state for minors, for young people seeking, quote, gender-affirming care. The most radical abortion law in the United States, a budget that went up 38% in one budget cycle, along with a $10 billion increase in taxes. A governor who dithered and delayed in calling out the National Guard as Minneapolis was on fire. Doesn't sound like a moderate to me. Doesn't sound like someone who's in sync. In fact, as somebody pointed out, he said, Let's see. This guy waited and delayed while Minneapolis was on fire. And then Kamala Harris publicly called on people to help bail out the people they arrested for arson and looting and vandalism. Which, by the way, is true. She called on people to give to a left-wing bail fund that was bailing out people accused of violent offenses. So that's your ticket. No wonder they're celebrating in Mar-a-Lago. And yes, the media is going to try and cover for him the way they are covering for Kamala Harris. Can you believe this? She has not done an interview in 17 days. She's not done an interview in 17 days. And the media, the mainstream media, are not upset about it. Boy, talk about not doing your job. but that is where they are. And this gives us a glimpse into what Kamala Harris is all about. When she feels the pressure from the left, she buckles. It is more important for her to have the progressive left than to balance out the ticket. So there they are. One progressive leftist who is not very pleased today is Cori Bush. Cori Bush, one of the most strident anti-Israeli members of the squad in Congress, is out of a job. She was running for a fourth term, and she was facing a primary from a local prosecutor. And in comes the American-Israeli PAC, remembering the things that she said and the votes that she's cast, and they spent $8 million or more getting rid of her. She lost her primary by 6 percentage points yesterday. And she is not very pleased about it. Here's Cori Bush in defeat.
Whether I'm Congresswoman or not, I'm still taking care of my people. And let me say this. Because your side was so weak, you had to spend $19 million.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they spent that much, but I think they're pleased that they did. And they obviously think they got their money's worth. Now, her place was not taken by a Republican. Her place was taken by a fellow Democrat named Wesley Bell. And he said, you know, look, when I was elected prosecutor, I looked around. There's, you know, dozens of police departments in this county and community groups and business organizations and neighborhood groups. And he said, you know, my job was to get together with all of them and see if we could get on one page when it came to fighting crime.
So, I mean, it kind of looks like an activist, Shama Sawant type. That's Cori Bush's background, correct?
Yes.
My general understanding of her political life. And then this guy that beats her is an elected prosecutor at the county level.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he's probably got to try and reach a more broad-based group of people to get elected prosecutor.
So that is now the American-Israeli PAC is 2 for 2. They've picked off 2 anti-Semitic members of the House of Representatives, both members of the left-wing squad. They took out Jamal Bowman, a couple of months ago in the New York primaries. Yeah. He was going for another term in Congress.
Did you see what Ben Shapiro, the conservative commentator, said about the election in St. Louis for that congressional seat with Cori Bush?
No.
He posted, condolences to Hamas on the loss of both its political leader and its congresswoman from Missouri.
Yes. Hamas not pleased.
Zing.
They're down to one, and that's Rashida. They're down to two. Ilhan Omar in Minnesota. And I bet she's pleased, by the way, with Tim Walz being on the ticket. I know Pramila Jayapal is pleased. Rashida Tlaib, of course, who's the most antagonistic anti-Semite who is left now that Cori Bush has been shown the door. Wednesday here, hump day on the John Carlson Show. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, hump to it there with the social media sweep, your favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists.
Yeah, like I said, I'll continue along with a little bit of the information you had about this congressional election primary loss for one of the squad members, Democrat Cori Bush in St. Louis. And people have been posting this portion of her concession speech last night, basically her speech to her supporters at her campaign headquarters last night after the results came in that she lost in this primary. So I'll read off what she's going to say, and then I'll play it for you. But this took place over maybe about a two-minute stretch of her comments last night. She says, quote, all they did was radicalize me. And when she says they, she means the political backers that campaigned against her.
Yes.
So she says, quote, all they did was radicalize me, so now they need to be afraid.
No.
And then I edited out about 60 seconds where she says some other stuff, but then she follows this all up by concluding with this line, AIPAC, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down. So, like I said, it's about 2 minutes worth of her speech comments. I've edited it down to about 27 seconds. Here's what Cori Bush said.
Let's talk about what it really is. Because, see, now I don't have to worry about some strings that I have attached, as much as I love my job. But all they did was radicalize me, and so now they need to be afraid.
Now they need to be afraid.
Wow. AIPAC, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down.
Tear your kingdom down, AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. So I guess she did not get the message from Joe Biden that we need to cool down the political rhetoric.
Find common ground.
Right? She apparently missed out on that news story from a couple of weeks ago.
She's coming to tear the – pretty soon she won't have the right to walk on the House floor.
Yeah.
Pretty soon she won't have an office in Congress.
Yeah, she's saying her political opponent should be afraid, so there's one thing. And then she says she's going to tear AIPAC's kingdom down. And the other part that, you know, I was kind of using the Joe Biden cool down the political rhetoric line is my subtle way of trying to be humorous and diffuse rhetoric that she's using. But here's another example that's a little bit more serious. Cori Bush was essentially elected on the Black Lives Matter type platform. That was a big component of her political constituency and her political concern. And that Black Lives Matter defund police concept also came with, do you remember this? We need to have police officers that de-escalate, right?
Yeah.
So here's an example of her not de-escalating. So when push comes to shove, what does she do? She escalates the rhetoric.
Yeah, she doesn't appear.
When she's saying
to
she's an advocate for police de-escalating, but when it comes to her own personal behavior, unfortunately, at last night's losing side of the primary election, she won't de-escalate.
And by the way, she didn't de-escalate during Ferguson, Missouri. Ferguson, where the media, the activists, and the news media disgracefully distorted, exaggerated, and lied about the actions and the comments and the behavior of Michael Brown, who it turns out, attacked a police officer, tried to grab his gun.
That's something you covered extensively a number of years ago.
She was one of the people claiming he had his hands up saying, don't shoot. And she was leading demonstrations and anti-cop protests. And again, that shooting was absolutely justifiable. Even the Obama administration, Eric Holder's Justice Department, exonerated the police officer in that shooting. And yet that's one of the things that she built her career on.
Let me try and wedge in one more quickie. This is a gal from Oregon who's a reliable political lefty, Rachel Bitecofer. And Bitecofer posted about this Tim Walz, Kamala Harris ticket, and posted, anyone ever asks you to name something Kamala Harris accomplished while VP, ask them to name something Pence, Mike Pence, accomplished other than avoiding being hanged by Trump's mob. One problem with her logic there. Mike Pence tried to run for president, lost in the primary.
Yes.
Kamala Harris was elevated to the nominee of the Democratic Party. That's why she's getting that scrutiny of what she's accomplished.
Right.
Nice try, but completely different things there.
You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, your word for the morning. On our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest is ferry, as in ferry boat, F-E-R-R-Y. Text the word ferry to 206-421-5757. That's all you got to do, and you're automatically entered into the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest for a four-night trip to New York City for you and three of your friends. A lot of people say, okay, now with this new ticket of Kamala Harris replacing Joe Biden and Tim Walz replacing Kamala Harris as the vice presidential running mate, what does Donald Trump do to win the race? How does he win? Because he was preparing to run against Biden, and Biden would have been the easier opponent, which is true. So now what does he do? Well, I'll tell you what he does. He should run ads like this one. Have a listen.
If I give you one message to hold in your hearts today, it's this. Treat the word impossible as nothing more than motivation. Relish the opportunity to be an outsider, because it's the outsiders who change the world and who make a real and lasting difference. The more that a broken system tells you that you're wrong, the more certain you should be that you must keep pushing ahead. You must keep pushing forward.
That is an ad that is actually animated. Instead of seeing, you know, the usual
videos, right?
And it is spectacular. It is simple, and it is brilliant. That is how Donald Trump wins this election. He talks, again, when Donald Trump wants to motivate, man, he can motivate. And so, if he talks more like this more often, he's going to be just fine. Okay? Kamala Harris had a test. The choice of a running mate was a test for her. Would she broaden the Democrat ticket, or would she pick someone demanded by the left-wing base of the party? And she caved in to the left-wing base of the party. So he will be her attack dog, and he is the one. By the way, this 60-year-old white male with a diversity crowd doesn't mind having a white male as long as he has a record like this guy. Usually when you hear liberals complain about a lack of diversity. What they really mean is there's a lack of political uniformity in our direction. And when they have a choice between, let's say, a black moderate or a white progressive, they'll take the white progressive every time. And that's what you have with Congressman Tim Walz. That is who the left wanted. Have you heard from a single disappointed liberal activist? Have you heard any complaints from any left-wing activists at all? No. So while the left-wing activists are mollified, you have the media, like trained seals, saying, oh, thank God we have moderates, a moderate choice, a down-the-middle moderate like Tim Walz. Here in just the last 24 hours, here's a quick montage beginning with MSNBC commentator and defeated former senator from Missouri, Claire McCaskill. Then you'll hear Brianna Kyler from CNN.
The idea that Tim Walz is some lefty is just not true in reality. He got elected in a district that was very moderate.
Walz, of course, was very moderate in Congress.
Establishing himself as a moderate Democrat.
He had a pretty moderate record, rather moderate Democrat, viewed as a moderate Democrat.
He is a centrist. To say that he's more liberal than Vice President Harris or the most liberal congressman, which I'm sure we're going to hear, just...
Okay, first of all, he hadn't been in Congress for 6 years. So we keep hearing from the media say, he was a moderate in Congress. He hasn't been there in half a dozen years. So don't tell me that he was a moderate in Congress when there's a six-year record as governor to go over. And when you do, of course, what it shows is he's ardently liberal. Every bit as much as the West Coast governors, Jay Inslee in Washington, Tina Kotek in Oregon, and Gavin Newsom in California. His record is virtually undistinguishable from those governors on economic and law enforcement and on cultural and cultural issues. He's every bit as far to the left as the West Coast liberals. The Harris campaign thinking, well, he's a 60-year-old white guy who used to coach football, and he's got very short hair. I think that we can pull this off. They're not going to pull it off.
Yeah, and if that makes Tim Walz a centrist or a moderate, where does that put Josh Shapiro? Is he now a fascist?
Well, to hear the left tell it, yes. Yes. So, you know, never mind that he, when he was elected from, in a banner year, one of the best midterm elections ever in the last 20 years for the Democrats, 2018, he gets elected, and he's cautious for his first couple of terms, because he doesn't want to lose his job. So he's, you know, moderately liberal in his rather conservative district. And then he runs for governor and he runs to the left because that's where he is. When you hear he was a teacher, you should probably also be told the other half of that, which is that he was a union official as a teacher. So... think of the NEA, National Education Association, one of the most woke and militantly liberal unions. That's Tim Walz.
And the unions were some of the loudest voices for locking down schools and
which is
moving,
what he
shifting
did.
To distance learning and computers instead of being in the classroom.
And then he lied about it. He kept the schools locked down for most of a year and said, most students were only... they only missed 10 days of school, which is just preposterously ridiculous.
Has Minnesota had kind of the learning loss that Oregon and Washington students have had?
Yes.
Post-COVID?
Yeah, and not only that, the dissatisfaction among parents, but there's no way he's going to support charter schools
That was
school choice.
Something that I think hurt Josh Shapiro's chances.
Yeah.
He had angered teachers' unions because he had been pro-school choice.
Just because he had been open to it. He ended up deciding
passing anything
it.
Per se.
Yes.
But yeah, he had expressed support for the concept of school choice.
So he had actually flip-flopped on the issue. But because he had even deigned to say something nice about letting parents send their kids to schools that work and leave schools that do not work, it was one more reason they did not want him as the nominee. Being Jewish and a supporter of Israel did him in. That's the final, as we heard from Van Jones, liberal commentator for CNN, and from Chuck Todd, liberal commentator for Meet the Press, NBC, same. That even they acknowledge that. This was the very loud, very strident left wing of the Democrat Party making these demands. And by the way, just to give you another idea of the attitude of the media, listen to MJ Lee. MJ Lee is not a commentator. MJ Lee is a reporter. MJ Lee is the White House correspondent for CNN. Here is MJ Lee's reaction to Tim Walz.
What an incredible contrast we have now on the Democratic ticket with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz on it at the same time. We have somebody in Kamala Harris.
Not the Democrats have somebody in Kamala Harris. We. Let's see if she says the word we again.
Who embodies the dynamism, the innovation of big cities, particularly in the coasts of this country. And then in Tim Walz, we have somebody who's...
We have somebody. Talk about letting your bias show, not to mention how obtuse you sound when you say, well, we have someone who knows the city and then someone who knows the small towns out there. We can see that well here from Washington, D.C.
Sort of embodies the proud, the resilient, the hardworking, patriotic middle of the country. And I do think that we can easily imagine Tim Walz.
She can't help herself.
Very much embracing and leaning into that contrast.
Okay, that's three times. That instead of reporting, was there a fourth in there too? Four times. MJ Lee, the White House reporter, the correspondent for CNN, and analyzes the ticket by saying, we see this, we see that, we have this, we have that. Boy, is that ever revealing. And, of course, you're only going to hear that kind of analysis here on the John Carlson Show. It's what makes this show so indispensable. And it's 12 minutes now to 9 o'clock, a reminder. Our word of the morning for the Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest. Four nights in New York City for you and three of your friends. That's four of you in New York City for four nights celebrating New Year's Eve. How's that sound? The word is ferry, F-E-R-R-Y, as in ferry boat, F-E-R-R-Y. Text the word ferry to 206-421-5757, and you're automatically entered into a drawing for that four-night trip to New York City. Back we are on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, if you hadn't heard this clip, this is the clip of the wife of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, now running mate for Kamala Harris. His wife telling a news reporter that during the George Floyd riots in Minneapolis, she would leave the windows open in the governor's mansion so she could smell the odor of rioting in the air. Have a listen.
I would say those first days, you know, when there were riots, I could smell the burning tires. And that was a very real thing. And I kept the windows open for as long as I could because I felt like that was such a touchstone of what was happening.
I kept the windows open so I could smell the fumes of probably burning police cars. As Philip J. pointed out, those were the cars most likely to be torched during those riots were police cars and the burning tires. This is the guy who called Donald Trump and J.D. Vance weird. I'm sorry, you want an example of weird? Weird is someone who opens their windows so they can smell the rioting going on in the streets. That's weird. All right. We're going to have another ballot drop. Ari Hoffman's going to be covering it on his show. We'll have a better idea of how these races are settling out. So on tomorrow's show, I'm going to tell you who the big winners and big losers are of this primary election. Until then, have a great day.